From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that covers the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, some Texas women are running into problems at the polls due to the new voter ID law.
If you have encountered that problem at the polls and you are asked to vote a provisional ballot, please do so.
Kinky Friedman is back, and he's running for agriculture commissioner, saying a vote for Kinky is a vote for marijuana.
Yeah, I would like this to be a referendum on legalizing marijuana.
And despite not being able to defund the affordable health care law, Senator Ted Cruz returns to Texas like the conquering hero, and even his father is being celebrated by the Texas Tea Party.
There is no place to go. This is why we have to fight to preserve and restore.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There is a legal challenge underway, but voter ID is now in effect in Texas for the state election currently underway. Like anything brand new, there's going to be glitches. And for voter ID, it appears to be mismatching names on documents. And for women voters, this is particularly a problem. This week in Corpus Christi, the 117th District Court Judge Sandra Watts ran into difficulties when she tried to cast a vote in her own courthouse. But despite the haranguing circumstances, she was allowed to cast her vote. The Texas League of Women Voters is monitoring the situation. The group has long been known as a truly nonpartisan organization that works to improve greater participation in the democratic process. Linda Kriftine is the president of the League of Women Voters of Texas.
The Texas voter ID law does expect an exact match between the name on a voter registration and the name on a photo ID. And so if there's an exact match between the names, the voter is automatically accepted to vote a regular ballot. If the name on a photo ID differs somewhat from the name on the voter registration, the poll worker should look for additional information to decide whether the photo ID and the voter registration match. And so they will look at things like the address, the date of birth, and even the photograph itself to make a determination. So the question has arisen for women. If, for example, they've changed their last name and the voter registration has one last name and their driver's license has another last name, can they be accepted for voting? And the answer is yes, if the other information matches. You know, so if it's the same address, the same date of birth, the voter should be accepted to vote a regular ballot. The other kind of issue that's been raised is about middle names. If the middle name on your driver's license is a maiden name and the middle name or middle initial on your voter registration is a given middle name, is that going to preclude you from voting? And the answer is no, it shouldn't. That those are substantially similar names, and if the address or date of birth match, you should be accepted to vote a regular ballot. So there are procedures in place in Texas for accepting voters, even if there are differences between the name on the photo ID and the name on the voter registration. There is a small extra step for a voter whose names are similar but not exact, and that is they will need to initial an extra box when they sign in to vote. But that's all it takes. It's called an affidavit in law, which is kind of a big formal term. But all it amounts to is initialing a box saying your names were similar.
So there have been some stories of women being turned away or being told there's an issue here. So what do you make of that?
Well, the story I've heard is about a judge who had to go through the similar name procedure, but was accepted to vote. So she wasn't disenfranchised. She got to vote. They had to decide that the two names were similar. She had to sign an affidavit, which means she had to initial that box in order to vote. Now, if there are voters who believe they should have been accepted to vote a regular ballot, they should have been offered at the polls a provisional ballot. And what a provisional ballot means is we'll let you vote today, and we will determine later whether your vote should count. And if you didn't have ID that was accepted at the polls, your name was too different, your ID was expired too long, or you didn't have one of the limited number that Texas accepts when you go to vote, you will be asked to vote a provisional ballot, allowed to. And if you vote a provisional ballot for ID purposes reasons, you will have a period of 6 days after the November 5 election to go back and to show proper ID. If you show proper ID, your provisional vote will be counted.
According to the Brenham Center for Justice, 34% of women nationally lack identification that precisely matches their current full and legal name. So there could be a lot of women who would have problems.
Well, they would have problems, but the substantially similar name rules that allow some variability should take care of many of those. For example, if you currently have a Texas driver's license, and you are registered to vote in Texas, and all the differences is the last name on those two, and the other data match up, you should still be allowed to vote a regular ballot. So it shouldn't be a problem for you. Whether you have all the documentation on name changes may show up is if you don't already have an acceptable ID and you want to go get a Texas driver's license or a Texas election identification certificate. Then when you go to the Texas DPS office, you're going to be asked to show things, the documentation on the changes in name. You know, and I talked to the Secretary of State's office this morning, actually, about this issue. And they also said if you are asked to vote a provisional ballot because of a difference in last name, you can go back and show the name change in that six-day period and correct the problem and have your ballot counted.
The interesting thing for me is that, you know, the Secretary of State's office, they're able to come up with, these determinations. But how these rules are actually implemented at the polling site, I mean, it could vary from site to site depending on who's running the site.
We absolutely agree with that. And that is one of the concerns also, I think, for the Secretary of State's office when I talked to them this morning. And that's one of the things we want to monitor, and we are in the process of putting up an online form on our website, lwvtexas.org, so that if folks want to share their experience in voting under photo ID, they can tell us what happened to them at the polls, if they were accepted easily or if they encountered problems. We'd love to hear about it.
And some of these problems may not be just with women and their issues of matching up the names, but, you know, some Spanish names like De La Garza, some people are thrown off by the Della part. And is that the middle name? Sometimes it gets kind of skewed in government documents, and those things can be a problem as well.
Yep. Yes. The issues of substantially similar names are not limited to women. The examples that have been in the news recently have been about women, you know, the middle name issue and the change of last name. But yes, substantially similar names do affect and can affect an awful lot of people. You know, registering to vote under a nickname and having a formal name on the driver's license, those kinds of things.
Or even things like Bob or Robert or Dave and David.
Those are supposed to be accepted. You know, if you want to, we've also posted already on the League's website and on the League's Facebook page, a link to the Secretary of State's training materials on determining substantially similar names. And common nicknames are supposed to be accepted as substantially similar. Now, I know Bob and Robert real well, given my cultural experience. I'm not so familiar with common nicknames in Asian cultures or Latino cultures. Not so sure I know all of those. So yes, those can be problems. Again, if you have encountered that problem at the polls and you are asked to vote a provisional ballot, please do so. And then you've got 6 days after November 5 to go to and clarify things with the elections office in your county.
Well, let me throw a curveball at you. And if we're going to have voter ID, and I know that there's a Department of Justice challenge to this and it's working its way through the courts, but at the end of the day, we're going to have voter ID, why have voter registration at all? Why not, if you have a proper ID, you're on the rolls, go vote?
That's a good question. Voter registration has a couple of other things going with it. In Texas, we require that you be in Texas 30 days before you vote. There's a residency requirement. It's not a very long one, 30 days. And if you have same-day registration at the polls, how you implement that's a little bit different.
Now, but if you have, but if everyone's got to have a driver's license or a concealed handgun permit or whatever you're going to use, then that information could be available to anyone running that poll, and then they would be able to determine that, you know, you live in this address, this is your driver's license, you have this residency. It seems like now we're actually able to eliminate this barrier to people. Basically, if you have a legal ID in Texas, these ones that have been approved, that means that you are eligible to vote. Why have this clumsy, expensive, and sometimes erroneous process called voter registration?
There are a couple of responses to that one. One of them is that people have more confidence. Some people have more confidence in voter registration because when you register to vote, you're submitting an application and somebody checks it out before you are actually registered. And if it's rejected, you should learn the reasons for that. If you show up at the polls, it's a little bit more complicated to decide who's who and what's what. Now, there are states that are very successful with same-day registration at the polls, which is what they call it. You show up with the ID, and that's the first time you register, and you vote on the same day. And I'd actually like to see, the League would actually like to see that in Texas. There were a couple of bills submitted in the last legislative session that would have allowed same-day registration. They didn't make it all the way through the process, so we don't yet have that in Texas. But there are many things to recommend that. And in fact, one of the big problems in Texas is low levels of voter turnout. You know, we have some of the lowest in the nation year after year after year. And what's true about states that have same-day voter registration is they tend to have the highest voter turnout. And we think Texas could do a lot of things that would move us towards higher turnout, and we would have a better government buy-in for the people if we did have higher turnout at the polls.
Linda Kriftine is the president of the League of Women Voters of Texas. They are working to educate the public about the demands of the new voter ID law, and they are monitoring the current election after reports of some women having problems voting due to mismatching names on voting documents. There's more information on their website at lwvtexas.org. That election that's currently underway, while there are some local races around the state generating interest, for most Texans, it's all about the props, the 9 constitutional amendments. Prop 6 is getting most of what little attention there is out there for the issues. That would take $2 billion from the state's rainy day fund for water development projects. Supporters say it's needed because we're in a drought. Opponents say there's plenty of bond money already available for the Texas Water Development Board. There are 9 props in total, and one of them, Prop 5, deals with reverse mortgages. Proponents say Prop 5 tightens regulations and helps eliminate some fees for reverse mortgages. The prop does have the endorsement of most newspapers in Texas and also the AARP. Tim Morstad is the Associate State Director for the AARP Texas.
Reverse mortgages are essentially loans. They're loans that are made against the equity in a property that somebody already owns. And what makes this a unique product is that a consumer can pull the equity out of their home and essentially have that money paid back to them on a monthly basis over a term of many, many years.
And this is a financial instrument that is very lucrative and attractive for seniors?
Reverse mortgages sometimes is a good fit for seniors. It's certainly not a good fit for all seniors because there's several considerations that need to be thought through. If a couple or a single person are house rich and have a good deal of equity in their house and don't have other income later on in life, it may make sense to pull some of that equity out to pay themselves back through that property, but through a reverse mortgage. And that may make sense for some people. For other people, it may not make sense because there are fees, it is a loan, and it could impact qualifying for important programs like Medicaid, which some people don't think about the long term, but when we get into our later years, most households spend their income and their assets down to qualify for Medicaid to be able to get long-term care services. and that's very important. A reverse mortgage can impact someone being qualified or not qualified for Medicaid. And so these are some long-term things that people need to consider when they are looking at reverse mortgages.
The term reverse mortgage really is a misnomer because it's like a regular mortgage, but you were selling your house and you're going to be paid out installments rather than getting all of the proceeds at once.
Yeah, it's a reverse mortgage. I view it this way. You're paying yourself back out of the equity that you've built up in your home over the years or the decades, and in a sense that's like a loan. Instead of you paying the bank to purchase a property, a bank is paying you back via the equity in your home.
But it seems like there's a lot of money to be made with reverse mortgages. We see a lot of hard selling happening on daytime TV with people like Fred Thompson and Henry Winkler telling how great it is to have this guaranteed tax-free income for those 62 and over.
Yeah, no doubt the reverse mortgage market is expanding. In Texas, as in other states, many seniors are finding themselves house rich but cash poor. And as they move along into their retirement years and the monthly income becomes less and less, more people are looking towards their biggest asset, which is their home, to start pulling out some of that money in regular payments to themselves to supplement their monthly income. It's an emerging market, but as I mentioned, it's one that needs to be thought through from the borrower's perspective, because it is a loan and there are fees associated with it, and there are some long-term implications for qualifying for important public programs like Medicaid, which are very important for long-term care services.
Many of these fees, I understand, are hidden, that they are buried in the expansive loan documents. Is that what Proposition 5 is trying to deal with? Is it a lessening of the fees?
So Proposition 5 is for a specific type of reverse mortgage. It's called a reverse mortgage for purchase. And what Prop 5 would allow, if passed by the voters, is a combination of two transactions. So here's the two transactions. If someone wanted to purchase a house and immediately start a reverse mortgage today, they would have to do two separate transactions, and the fees associated with each are in the thousands. There would be the purchase of the house and then the commencement of a reverse mortgage. What Prop 5 will do is allow reverse mortgage for purchase here in Texas, which will allow that to be combined to one transaction, one set of fees, which should reduce the cost to the consumer. But to be clear, a reverse mortgage for purchase is just one narrow slice of the reverse mortgage market here in Texas. Texas right now is the only state that can't offer a reverse mortgage for purchase because our state constitution prohibits having liens against homestead properties. And so this is a change to the state's constitution to allow these two transactions to be combined to one. And the hope and promise is that it will reduce the cost to borrowers who want to do this unique transaction where they're buying a property and immediately starting a reverse mortgage at the same time.
Tim Morstad is the Associate State Director for AARP Texas. They have endorsed Prop 5 on the ballot that would have an impact on some reverse mortgages in the state. There is a crowded field of candidates running for the Republican nomination for Agriculture Commissioner, but for the Democrats, they've got Kinky. Richard Samet Kinky Friedman is a 68-year-old humorist and sometimes politician. Friedman last ran for Agriculture Commissioner in 2010, but lost the Democratic primary. He ran for governor as an independent in 2006 and came in third with 12% of the vote. In some ways, Friedman's announcing his campaign is further proof about the continued disarray of the Texas Democratic Party. He is just the third candidate to announce his intention to run on the blue ticket, after Fort Worth Senator Wendy Davis for governor and Mike Collier for state comptroller. Nevertheless, Kinky is unabashed and is running on a platform of legalizing marijuana and casino gambling.
I believe that legalizing marijuana and taxing, regulating, and cultivating it in the state of Texas would be one of the most valuable things we could do for our economy, for criminal justice, for immigration, for education. It will play in all of those casinos. And I think it's the right thing to do for Texas if we want a leadership role in America, if we want to end the war on drugs. This is the way to do it. And you're talking to a guy who endorsed gay marriage in 2005 as a candidate for governor when nobody was endorsing it. I'm saying that it's really interesting to see if any of the other candidates will endorse legalizing marijuana. Because, you know it's coming. I mean, we can all, 15, 20 years from now, we will legalize marijuana and gambling. But by that time, you know, it won't mean much to America. I mean, we will be the caboose on the train. And for any young people listening, the caboose is the last car on the train.
Legalizing marijuana is your main, is your tent pole part of why you are running for Ag Commissioner of Texas.
Well, if nobody else is going to do it, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I would like this to be a referendum on legalizing marijuana and get it done. Because I think the law enforcement people that I've talked to, they say we're losing the war on drugs every day. They're for it. And I am serious as cancer. And speaking of cancer, the entire cancer community, I believe, is for this because we don't even have medicinal marijuana in Texas, which is ridiculous, since cancer is the biggest thing that's going to happen in our country. One out of three people will get it, and it plays hell with the whole family. And right now, the top oncologists in Austin and Houston will tell you, go to East Austin or go to whatever the area in Houston is where they sell drugs these days, because they don't have it.
The agricultural commissioner, of course, does not have the authority to legalize the growing of marijuana or hemp.
Well, I don't think the governor does either. I mean, I think this is going to be, this is something that that I think I can get across. Yeah, that we will start the dialogue. Blessed is the match that kindles the flame. But we will create great heat with this because it's a very stupid thing to do, to ban gambling and ban marijuana. If those are the two things that you're trying to ban, my God, I mean, I don't want to, just in a nutshell, legalizing marijuana in Texas would mean that candidates could talk about education all they want, but I'm telling you how we fund it. And it would also stop ruining the lives of young people who are busted for pot possession. It's been 2 or 3 years in some private prison chain that screws them up good. It would also take the wind out of the sails of the Mexican drug cartels, and it would make Willie Nelson very happy. So there's a lot of reasons to do it, and it's all interconnected, and it would let Texas be the way we used to be when we did whatever the hell we wanted to because we could afford to do it. And I'll say one more thing. I've heard from friends in Colorado, more than a few of them, that for the first time in memory, property taxes, state and local taxes are going down. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think it's has to do with legalizing marijuana and the revenues that they've engendered from that.
Kinky Friedman is running for Texas Agriculture Commissioner. The Ag Commission's job is to market Texas farm and ranch products and regulate the industry.
Having spent the last month in Washington, it's good to be back in America.
That was Texas Senator Ted Cruz. He was back in Texas and given a hero's welcome by conservatives after leading a shutting down of the federal government and attempting to breach the debt ceiling in a failed attempt to undo the Affordable Health Care law. Cruz wasn't in Texas very long. He's already back on the road this weekend in Iowa, where he's seen as continuing his work, laying the foundation for a run for the Republican nomination for president in 2016. Although national polls show Cruz and the Tea Party losing support, it was clear from the reception that Cruz received at his stops across Texas that he's still popular with his base. And even his father, the Reverend Rafael Cruz, is drawing crowds of admirers. At the Floresville Community Center near San Antonio, it was a Saturday afternoon of singing patriotic songs and a fire and brimstone political speech.
That outside of the Bible, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America are the two greatest documents that have ever been written.
That's the Reverend Rafael Cruz, father of Texas Senator Ted Cruz. About 250 people showed up for the Tea Party event, where Cruz said next to the Bible, the Constitution, and the Declaration of Independence are the greatest documents ever written by man.
I told my son, you know, Ted, when I faced oppression in Cuba, I had a place to flee. If we lose our freedoms here, where are we going to go? This is why we have to fight to preserve and restore.
The heart of Cruz's speech was about the evils of the separation of church and state, which he said was not the founder's intent. But he also told stories about his famous son and how when he was a high schooler, he would travel around Texas to Rotary clubs. While the members ate lunch, he would stand in front, writing out on an easel from memory the entire U.S. Constitution. And then he'd give a speech about the virtues of the American free enterprise system, skills Senator Cruz would later put to use on the floor of the Senate.
The senator from Texas.
Madam President, I rise today in opposition to Obamacare.
With that 21-hour-long speech, Senator Cruz became one of the most controversial politicians in Washington, D.C. And these days, despite the fact that the tactics sent his and the Tea Party's poll numbers into a national nosedive, he pledges to continue the fight. And it's a fight his father has joined. Back at the Floresville Event Center, the Reverend Cruz wraps up his speech by asking the audience to take a public oath to fight to restore liberty to America. There is even talk that the Reverend Cruz is considering a run for office, challenging incumbent Republican John Cornyn in a primary. Cornyn has run afoul of the Cruz acolytes and may be vulnerable on the right. And Reverend Cruz would have the support of voters like Tom Shoemaker. He says the Texas Tea Party is on the upswing.
We're finding that the people are coming out, as you can see here today, are coming out in greater numbers more recently, and they're starting to get more active again.
This hard swing to the right is inspiring other Texas politicians. In the 21st Congressional District, Tea Party candidate Matt McCall is challenging conservative Republican Lamar Smith.
And I think that the winds of change, they are blowing.
McCall says that Smith's voting record looks like a true conservative's on paper, but he says what really counts is how the nation's debt has grown in the 27 years that he's been in office.
And when he came into office, the debt was $2.2 trillion. This year, it's now $17 trillion.
But where does this swing leave Texas GOP moderates who once felt they had a home in the Republican Party? One answer could be found on the Bexar County Courthouse steps in San Antonio on Monday. Judge Carlo Key announced he was quitting the GOP and joining the Democrats.
I cannot be a member of a party that is proud to destroy the financial lives of hundreds of thousands of federal employees in a vain attempt to repeal a law which provides health care to millions of Americans across the country.
Key's party switch was hailed by Texas Democrats as a small step towards turning the state blue. But for Cruz and the Tea Party, Texas has never been more red. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Send emails with your take on the program to texasmatters@tpr.org. Or you can comment directly on our website at tpr.org. That's also where you can listen to past Texas Matters programs, and you can listen to us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.